The Volume.
Boxing with Chris Mannix is brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any other fantasy sport, there's a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Boxing with Chris Mannix, part of the Volume Sports Podcast Network. Huge week in boxing. We have Tyson Fury against Deontay Wilder, part three, in Las Vegas this weekend. That is the focal point of this week's episode. We begin with Akin Burak, the co-host of the DAZN Boxing Show. I talked to Akin Burak about maybe adjustments that Deontay Wilder might make, Tyson Fury's mindset after losing out on the Anthony Joshua fight, what's at stake for Deontay Wilder, a little bit more than just the WBC belt and where the winner goes from here. After that, we get into Anthony Joshua's loss to Alexander Usyk, changes Joshua might make, and where does Usyk now rank on the pound-for-pound list? Stick around for that conversation with Akin Burak. A little bit later on, Deontay Wilder himself, he joins the show. I talked to Deontay about his mindset coming into this fight, his decision to change trainers and go with Malik Scott, and just what instructions does Malik Scott have about throwing in the towel? Remember, Deontay Wilder said that was one of the biggest reasons he fired Mark Breland, because Breland threw in the towel. Does Scott have any instructions there? As always, best way to support this podcast, get over to Apple Podcasts, to Spotify, subscribe, rate, review. It's the best way to make sure we do this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, on to the show. All right, it is Fury Wilder fight week. Biggest heavyweight fight of the year coming on the heels of Anthony Joshua, Alexander Usyk. Hopefully to settle the differences between Fury and Wilder. To talk about that and a lot more, I'm going to bring in two of my favorite guys in boxing, the co-hosts of the DAZN Boxing Show, none other than Akin Burak. I should add, I guess, to your titles, fellas, like hype men for Gervonta Davis, Jermall Charlo defenders, Mauricio Sulaiman lovers. Like, what else can I add to your titles here, guys? What do you want me to?
Oh, we have a long list. We have a long list.
We're
the guys who actually love the sport. You know what I mean?
Ah,
so
yes.
The reality is you can add everybody to that list. We talk good about everybody.
Listen, good. Burak, I want you to keep that same energy when, like, Gervonta Davis, O'Hara Davies is announced, or Gervonta Davis, Fabian Maidana is announced. I feel bad for Gervonta Davis. He fights in a weight class where there's no real talent, and you can't make big fights at 135 or 140. So,
hey, listen.
I mean, it's just a bummer being him.
You know what's funny? We're saying that we need him to fight Ryan Garcia, and Ryan Garcia has one fight. You know, he has one fight that he won. Of course, I want to see that fight as well. But this, we're living in an era where there's stars in every single division. When me and you grew up, Chris, we'd watch boxing on HBO every 6 months and maybe Tuesday night fights. Like, come on, it's still good. Boxing is great. It's flourishing, man.
It's, well, flourishing might be a bit strong there. I think it's got some great moments. And, you know, what we saw a couple of weekends ago with Anthony Joshua and Alexander Usyk was a great moment. And I think it proved, and you guys can back this up, like, you know, when I did a post-fight podcast with Sergio Mora, like, the numbers were huge. Like, the interest in boxing when it's big is massive. The problem is, sometimes, more often than not, boxing will shovel crap in our face, which is whatever Gervonta will do next is probably going to be crap. Demetrius Andrade and Jermall Charlo will spend another year not fighting each other, which is crap. So that's always my biggest
issue. Yeah, Chris, those are a couple of divisions and a few fighters that we would like to see them fight certain fighters, but don't negate the fact that Crawford is fighting Porter, Plant is fighting Canelo, Wilder is fighting Fury. There are big fights that are happening in the sport. So
yes,
it's not all bad.
It's not all bad.
He just named three fights. That is the best fighting the best. In divisions where you have undisputed guys, that means the best fought the best. So you're talking about super middleweight, junior light, super lightweight, 200-pound division. Like, so many divisions, the best are fighting the best. But when you get one or two fights that don't happen, everybody talks about boxing like it's not good.
Do you guys think Chop Chop Corley's available for Gervonta?
We might be part of the fan club, but you're part of the haters.
And you might be the haters. Yeah, yes, you are of the Gervonta Davis.
The president of the Gervonta Davis haters club.
Oh no, Mauricio Sulaiman is number two on my list there. Why Mauricio won't order? And we don't need to go down this road because this is not topical at the moment. But why Mauricio won't order Demetrius Andrade as Jermall Charlo's mandatory is beyond me. He did it like 5 years ago with Adonis Stevenson and Sergey Kovalev. There is precedent for ordering two champions to fight each other as mandatories. I don't know why
it never happened, though. I don't understand. That's why that order
It didn't happen for weird reasons. It didn't, like, the HBO contract, the Showtime contract. That I don't fault the sanctioning body for. But order it. Order the fight. And then we'll see who's bluffing, who's not being truthful about ducking.
It's like ordering at a Caribbean restaurant. No disrespect, but you ever go to a Caribbean restaurant, they never have what's on the menu. You know what I mean? So I can't stand it.
I would say this, though. Not since Riddick Bowe threw his belt in the trash can have I seen a bigger duck job than Jermall Charlo against Demetrius Andrade.
That's the thing, though. Who's ducking who, though? Like,
oh, no. There's no two sides. There's no both sides. This Andrade has said he'll fight on Showtime. Andrade has said he'll take $3 million. Mm. Andrade has said he'll pay $5 million to bring Charlo, plus almost $7 million to bring Charlo over to his own side. I don't know there's two sides of the story.
I got to ride with Chris on that one, though.
Yeah. No, I was just asking. I wasn't riding with any. Yeah. I'm asking who. Because when he was talking about back then, you knew that Bo didn't want to fight. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I never think fighters always want to fight. I'm never, Jermall Charlo is not afraid of Demetrius Andrade. I don't know why he ever would be. But the fact that he is going to go on and probably fight like Maciek Soletsky or Luis Arias for the end of the year is mind blowing to me. Anyway, that is for another podcast. We are here to talk Fury against Wilder. All three of us will be in Las Vegas this week doing some stuff. I'll be there for SI, doing some stuff for DAZN as well. As I look at this fight, guys, one of the things I try to kind of wrap my head around are kind of the unknowns, the variables that I can't really account for just yet, whether it's Wilder's mindset coming off a big knockout loss, Fury preparing for Anthony Joshua, then losing out on it, and now he's kind of pivoting back to Deontay Wilder. What kind of shape is he going to be in? Malik Scott, his presence, what kind of factor will that be? Ak, I'll start with you. What's the unknown for you in this fight? What are you kind of looking to learn on? What are you going to learn immediately on fight night?
I think there's more unknown with Deontay Wilder. I think Tyson Fury, even though he was scheduled to fight Anthony Joshua, he's already shared a ring with Deontay Wilder twice and coming off with a big knockout win in the second time. So his confidence level is there. Now, as far as people are saying he's not prepared, how the hell do we know? We talked about it on our show. He always looks out of shape to me, so I couldn't tell if he's staying in shape or not. Now, in terms of Wilder, his confidence level is unknown. He is coming off of a knockout loss. And yes, he has a new trainer who obviously has implemented some new stuff and looks good on social media. We don't know if he's going to be able to execute that in the ring. So his confidence level going into this fight is the most unknown. Now, I'm not Barack, and I know you're going to say he's the most confident man in the world. But in that ring, coming off the loss, he's never been in this position right here. So that, to me, his confidence going into that fight is the most unknown. And hopefully he can execute the new stuff that he's been learning.
What do you think, Brock?
I think that it's going to be whether Wilder can, keep that anger that he has. Because you've never seen Wilder this angry against an opponent. Keep that anger at a level where it doesn't mess up his game plan. And can he actually be a technical fighter? Implement the things that he's learning, resharpening with Malik Scott.
Yeah, well, you bring up Malik Scott, Barack, and that's a question that I have. Now, like Fury, when you go back to when Fury made the switch from Ben Davison to Sugar Hill, Sugar Hill didn't try to reinvent Tyson Fury. He just did what some people in Fury's camp prior, including Freddie Roach, felt he should be doing more of, being more offensively oriented. They felt he was a bigger puncher than people gave him credit for. They felt his size could be harnessed more. And that's exactly what Sugar Hill did. Now, I don't know, Barack, what Malik Scott is necessarily going to change in Deontay Wilder, but Malik Scott, as a fighter, was more of the slick boxer, wasn't known for any kind of power. And when you hear the public comments coming out of Team Wilder, whether it's, we're going to be more of a boxer in this fight, we're going to go to the body a little bit more, I kind of scratch my head at that and say, I don't know if reinventing this guy is the best thing to do. In fact, I don't know if reinventing this guy is even possible. I mean, as Fury has often said, like, you know, you can talk about changing your game plan all you want, but when you get in there, you're going to revert to what you were. And I don't know if some of the things that Malik Scott seems to be trying to do with Wilder, I just don't know if it's going to pay off.
I don't agree. I don't agree with the statement about reinventing, because I believe that if anybody...
That was Wilder's word, though. That was Wilder's word in one of his quotes, like reinvented, rejuvenated and reinvented.
No, what I'm saying is that I believe that Fury was reinvented. I believe that, yeah, that's something that they might have said that he should have been doing, but he wasn't doing. So in other words, he went from a boxer to a puncher. That's reinventing. That's totally different. I think that's the same thing Derek James did with Jermell Charlo. You went from a boxer to a puncher. Now we expect Jermell Charlo to knock everybody else out. Andre Ward went from a boxer to an inside fighter. That's something that they worked on. And I think the same thing can happen with Deontay. But the thing about Deontay is that he was able to box in 2015 when he won the title against Stiverne. Watch it. He boxed. He boxed on the back foot. He had check hooks, everything. His jab was amazing. Now, if you look at his last fight with Ortiz, his jab wasn't amazing, but he has it. So it's just Malik is even publicly saying, hey, I'm not really trying to teach him new tricks. I'm trying to bring that back out of him. Like, this is how you got here. You remember you was in the Olympics? You won a bronze medal?
Yeah. And I think to add to that, his athleticism can play a major part in using that boxing ability. Barack, you pointed out the jab. Now, he has speed. I would say he's faster than Fury. He's more athletic, and he's quicker on his feet. I mean, he might not have the best footwork, but he's athletic. So if he can use his jab, it's going to put him in a position where he can get the right distance to land that right hand. We are waiting for the big right hand to drop and land. Problem is, he wasn't at the right distance. And he wasn't because he was not using his jab. He wasn't shooting into the body, wasn't shooting into the head. I mean, that's what puts you in position. That's the key weapon. So I think if he uses that, I mean, if Malik can get him to at least do that, he's going to be in range to be able to land that right hand. And Barack, yes, he had a decent check. At least he used a check hook. I wouldn't say that that's going to be a useful tool, because I think Fury's just too big. I think a check left hook is going to put him in danger. But I think the jab and knowing when to shoot that right hand is going to be key in that fight. And I think Malik, I think that he can make some sort of change. I don't know about reinventing, Chris, but I think that if he listens to Malik, I think Malik is a great boxing mind. I think we're going to see a better Deontay Wilder.
I would ask you this, Barack. I'll give you the Stiverne fight, the first one, where he definitely boxed in that fight. Stiverne was, you know, at the end, almost quite literally. So I don't know what he had left in that fight. But other than that, like, most of his fights, he winds up down the scorecards on because he's not boxing at all, and he's relying on that hair trigger right hand, which is a potent weapon. Don't get me wrong, but I've never looked at him. The jab to me, and maybe you think differently, the jab to me has always been a rangefinder. Like, he's kind of putting it out there. Right. It's never been that kind of Gennady Golovkin piston rod jab, or even the Klitschko or the Lennox Lewis. He just never used it like that. It was always kind of pawing to me to set up that big right hand behind it, which was effective, but I don't know that it's going to be a great weapon for him in this fight.
Not the Stiverne fight. Watch the Stiverne fight again, the first one.
I did the first one,
That jab was a real jab. That was a real jab.
It was.
Sometimes a power jab here and there. But what I'm saying is that he even admits it. He got away from the basics. He even admitted that he was barely training properly. Like, yeah, he would spar. He wouldn't run. He wouldn't do a lot of things because he started to, like Jerry Cooney always says, read his own press. When you're knocking everybody out, I mean, you have to be super disciplined to say, you know what, I need to go hit these 4 miles.
And not only that, Chris, you're right. He was relying on the power for the last, I don't know how many fights, but maybe that's all Malik has to do. Maybe Malik has to, you know, create a Deontay Wilder that doesn't rely on power and wants to win rounds. Wants to win rounds. And he won rounds against DeVern, to Barack's point. Maybe we just need an old Deontay Wilder kind of refurbished to the point where he's not relying on the power and just let that come naturally.
To me, the most important thing in this fight is for Wilder to come forward. Like, he can't fight on the back foot. He's not knocking Tyson Fury out on the back foot. And I think Fury figured out in that first fight, Barack, that if he just keeps pushing him and pushing him and pushing him, it takes away Wilder's best and maybe his only weapon there. And I'll be looking for that in the first couple of rounds. That's the unknown to me. Can Wilder press the action in ways we saw him do at times in that first fight and I don't think saw him do at all in the second fight?
Yeah, I think Luis Ortiz had the same game plan in the second fight. Push Wilder back. It happened. And think about it. The punches that hurt Luis Ortiz were like a counter punch or maybe that uppercut on the inside. So it's like he did hit him. Pushing Deontay Wilder back, he was able to generate that power. He just has this awesome power for a guy with small legs. And he grazes guys and he hurts them. Gerald Washington, it didn't even look like he barely hit him. And he hurts him. So
yeah, but
I think even going backwards, he's still a dangerous fighter. It's just that I don't know why he didn't have his legs, but he didn't have his legs, Chris. Look at it. First round against Fury, he didn't have his legs.
But Barack, he's a much less dangerous fighter on the back foot. I'm not saying he can't knock a guy out moving back, but if you have a game plan and you want to beat Deontay Wilder, that has to be at the top of your list. Let's push this guy back. Because he's less dangerous moving
right, when
back.
When you got your legs, you take a step back, whop, and you let that right hand go. He didn't do none of those things. He was so flat foot. And Deontay Wilder doesn't start the fight off flat foot.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. Ak, do you see this as win or go home for Deontay Wilder? Is his career done if he loses to Tyson Fury?
Oh man, that's a tough question. I would say, depending on how he loses, if we see another Deontay Wilder Tyson Fury 2, it's going to be tough to come back from that. It's going to be tough to come back. But if we see a competitive fight where Deontay wins rounds, maybe Tyson pulls it off at the end and gets a victory on the cards. I think we see a vicious knockout. He might need some time. But, you know, with that type of power in the heavyweight division, you know guys stick around for a long time. We probably will see him again, even if he loses. But if he loses drastically, I mean, it's going to be tough to come back from that. But depending on how he moves.
Yeah, you know, Barack, I don't think so because and it might not be because he doesn't have options. I'm sure he will. PBC is loaded with heavyweights. He could potentially fight, win or lose. Right. But how many times have we seen guys that get to the proverbial mountaintop, make a boatload of money, probably made $20 million for the last Fury fight? He'll be in eight figures at least for this upcoming fight. And look, we just saw it with Billy Joe Saunders. Not the same guy as Deontay Wilder, but Billy Joe Saunders made the most money in his career against Canelo Alvarez. He lost. And to this point, Billy Joe Saunders has not been able to kind of summon the fire to get back into it. I just don't see Deontay Wilder.
Well, his face was broken.
If the same thing happens in Fury Wilder 3, that it did happen in Fury Wilder 2. I just don't see Deontay at 36 years old turning around and being like, all right, I'm going to fight Adam Kovnowski, Charles Martin, and Chris Areola to get, you know, a big fight back. I get like $1 million a pop. Like, I just don't see him doing that.
All right, let me ask you a question. Andy Ruiz, who do you want to see him fight? Charles Martin, Luis Ortiz, or Kovnowski?
Well, Kovnowski. Kovnowski, if he beats Helenius, I want to see Kovnowski or Ruiz at Barclays Center before
that's,
the end.
That's an if, though. I'm talking about like right now.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, Charles Martin does nothing for me.
Yeah.
Who was the other one?
Luis Ortiz.
I mean, Ortiz, but he's like 56. Like, I don't know what. It doesn't really do it.
Right,
like,
but you would choose him over Charles Martin, and he's the guy that got to the mountaintop and got knocked down that mountaintop twice by Deontay Wilder. And he still fought. He just fought in November against Flores. So he's still a draw. He's somebody, well, if I ask myself that question, I would like Andy Ruiz to fight Luis Ortiz, even though he's, you know, AARP member. You know, so I think that Deontay Wilder is one of those guys that always has you on edge. So no matter what, you like to see those kind of guys fight. And you never know. Yes, he's 35, turning 36 this month. But you never know. He might just, if he loses to Fury, might just fight one more fight and then go back to the mountaintop. You never really know.
Yeah, but Rock, but I'm not saying that people aren't going to want to watch Deontay Wilder fight if he loses. I agree with you. I think, you know, the knockout factor is always going to keep a fight fan on the edge of his seat. But him mentally, can he deal with that type of loss and continue to fight? We've seen a lot since the loss. He said a lot of things on social media. Can he mentally come back from a devastating loss? That's the question. That's not question. Whether people want to
you
see
know,
him.
But I say that when you hear a fighter make an excuse or give a reason why, that's a positive thing. I know we in boxing, we don't like it. But in reality, it's a positive thing because in his heart, he still wants to continue. It's the guys that say, I don't really have it no more. You know what I'm saying? Those are the guys you really got to worry about. So him making up reasons that whether they sound strange to us or not, it's still saying, I know I can do this and nobody can beat me.
You talking about that Mike Tyson that said, I'm only fighting for money. That's why I came here. That Mike Tyson, that's the guy you got to worry about.
Those are the guys you got to worry about. You know what I mean?
Well, you mentioned something that is another part of this. I mean, Deontay Wilder has accused Tyson Fury of every cheating maneuver under the sun. Like, he has accused Tyson Fury of being the biggest cheater in boxing history, point blank, period. We know all eyeballs will be on Tyson Fury when his hands are being wrapped. Like, there will be a lot of scrutiny. Even if you think it's all bullshit, there'll be a lot of scrutiny on Tyson Fury. If the same thing happens, it's not going to be good for Deontay Wilder. It's just
that's a great point.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this, Barack, though, too. So I'm a Boxing Hall of Fame voter, and I was thinking about this the other day. If Deontay Wilder loses to Tyson Fury and retires after that, I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. I don't. He's had a long run as heavyweight champion. But Fury said this on social media this week. Like, who have you beaten? Like, Dominic Brazil is not a quality win. You've beaten Luis Ortiz twice. So you have two quality wins over the same guy. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you look at Wilder's resume and say he's worthy of being in the Hall of Fame. Am I crazy, or do you see some merit there?
You're not crazy at all. I think that's a very good question. I think it's valid points. I can only say this. Deontay Wilder was a champion before Joshua. He was a champion actually before Fury. People don't realize that. He won the title before Fury beat Klitschko. So he's our long-standing champion. 5 legitimate years in 1 month. He was heavyweight champion of the world. And it's not his fault that literally he fought whoever was available and was lobbying to get the Anthony Joshua fight. You know, in the beginning,
$120 million later.
No, that's years later, though, Chris. I'm talking about 2016, 2017. He was the one that was being blackballed, you know, like he wanted the fight. He wanted that fight and he couldn't get it. After he got with Fury, he's like, man, I'm not trying to see Joshua. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. That's just his feeling. Like, if you've been blackballing me all this time, now I don't want to fight you. You know who else did that? Errol Spence. Keith Thurman? I'm not fighting you. Because when I wanted to fight you, you didn't want to fight. So I'm going to fight everybody else. Does that mean he's scared of Keith Thurman? No. He just wants to do him dirty now because he felt like he was done dirty. And that's what Deontay was 5 years champion. You can't be mad at a guy that fought everybody available. And that's it. But I'm not saying those guys that he fought should get him into the Hall of Fame. And
with all that being said, Barack, I totally agree with everything. It still doesn't get you a ticket into the Hall of Fame.
I agree with you so much. I agree with you so much. I got to cut you off. That's such good stuff you're saying.
Yeah, that's great stuff. But does that get you through the gates in the Hall of Fame? But I'll ask you this, Chris. If he does score a knockout victory over Tyson Fury, will that sway your decision?
Yes, that would get my vote into the Hall of Fame. Yes, would be a definitive win over the number one heavyweight in the world. That's why I think, you know, on a broader scale, the stakes are even higher than the WBC championship and, you know, scoring a revenge win over Tyson Fury. This, to me, is Deontay Wilder's ability to either legacy. Punch his ticket into the Hall of Fame or not. There is room in the Hall of Fame, guys, for fighters that aren't Hall of Fame caliber. I put Mike Tyson in that category. Like, I don't think Mike Tyson was a Hall of Fame fighter. Like, you look at his resume, I don't know who he beat. Like, Larry Holmes at
there
the end
go,
of his career.
Chris, about time. Like, give it to him, Chris. Give it to him.
I don't see it. Same thing with Arturo Gatti.
Listen, like, just don't say that while you calling games in Brooklyn. Like, don't say that in Brooklyn.
No, like Arturo Gatti's the same way. Like Gatti, I don't think was a Hall of Fame fighter. Won championships and won a couple of weight classes, but was certainly not a Hall of Fame talent. But Tyson changed the game. Yeah. Gatti, in a way, changed the game with his popularity. He was a presence for so many years in boxing. I don't think you can say the same about Deontay Wilder. He wasn't and hasn't been that type of presence. He's still virtually not. I like Deontay a lot personally, so I'm rooting for him on a personal level. Right. But he's not well known in the U.S. He can't sell tickets unless he's with Tyson Fury. So
I see you had that argument ready, and that was very smart of you, because that's what people are gonna say when you say I'm not voting for Deontay Wilder, because neither one of those guys, I agree with you, Chris, belong in the Hall of, well, maybe Gatti. Gatti was a champion in two divisions. At least he had titles. I can see somebody squeezing him in there. But Mike Tyson, he never beat a great fighter. But look what he's done for boxing. Like, he carried boxing on his back, whether he beat great fighters or not.
I mean, I don't want to even get into a Mike Tyson. I have my thoughts about Mike Tyson. But still, I mean, that's a great point, man. It's a great point. I think Deontay gets in there if he scores a victory, though.
I'll put it to you point blank. If Deontay Wilder loses, I'll ask you both, yes or no, is he a Hall of Famer? Ock, is he a Hall of Famer?
No.
Barack?
I mean, see, Gatti is a Hall of Famer. Mike Tyson.
Gatti, you know what Gatti did in Bob Walker in Atlantic City every time he fought?
I don't know. Let me see. Who held the championship longer? Let me see.
Tyson. I don't like that argument. I like holding the championship.
It can't be the length of the title. Yo, Barack, I can name you some champions that held titles for a very long time that nobody knows.
Who did Klitschko beat?
He had a couple of decent.
Not really. Like he didn't beat no stars. He didn't beat no great fighters, but that's not his fault. That's not his fault. You know who he would have really had to beat? The other Klitschko, his brother. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And you can't do that. So it's like, you know why he's in there? Because he had that championship for 10 freaking years or whatever it was. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, that's why he's in, not because there was great fighters. And Deontay Wilder, it's your choice. I don't know, man. Maybe not, but maybe so.
I can't get next to the argument of holding a title for 5 years when it's Eric Molina, Johan Duapas, Artur Spilka, Chris Areola, Gerald Washington, the artist formerly known as Berman Stavern. Like, I can't get next to that. That's not an accomplishment to me. Like, if you had fought, you know, and granted, like, I mean, Klitschko was around for most of those years. That fight couldn't be put together. Joshua, yes, early, Wilder may have been chasing him. And by the way, Deontay was snake-bitten for several years. I mean, he was going to Russia to fight Povetkin right before Povetkin tested positive. Like, he was about to board a plane, and that would have been a quality win on his resume. So some of it's not.
Let's have this conversation on Sunday.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Let's see what happens after 100%. The fight.
On the undercard, I think one of the things I love about this is that PBC and Top Rank got together and put together a hell of an undercard, especially with the heavyweight aspect of it. The most interesting fight, Barack, on this undercard to you is what?
At first, I would have said Ajagba versus Sanchez, but when I really study it, I believe it's Edgar Belenga versus Cossettas. I say that because Cossettas is that same guy. You know what? He's not a known fighter. But he's that same guy that was whooping on Billy Joe Saunders. What was that, 2019? That LA show that DAZN did? Yeah. Like, he was whooping on him. And he, you know, he got knocked out in the, 11th round or whatever. But he just goes to show that he's a high-quality opposition. He's a high-quality fighter. And that's what we need to see guys like Edgar Belenga in, who has 17 wins, most of them 16 knockouts. We want to see how he does against guys like that. We know he's not getting him out in the first round. Well, probably. You know what I mean? So I want to see how he does against a guy like that. This is a huge step up. It's a regional belt. I know regional belts mean nothing here, NABO, whatever. You know, in Britain, they mean something. But here it means nothing, but I like this fight for him. And it's a scary fight, in actuality. It's going to determine whether he could box or not.
I think that's an interesting fight. I would say for me, the most exciting fight that I'm looking forward to is probably the rematch with Kalinowski and Helenius. I mean, I think it's going to be, we all know it's going to be a lot of leather thrown. And I like Kalinowski getting his opportunity to redeem himself after that loss. You know, he had momentum. He possibly was going to get the Deontay Wilder fight, you know, and he loses. So I think that's going to be a very entertaining fight. But I agree with you. You know, it's a stacked card. I'm looking forward to a great night of boxing.
No, I like Kalinowski against Helenius too. I mean, Kalinowski, like, he makes Andy Ruiz look like Anthony Joshua sometimes. Like, he's just not, doesn't look like your typical heavyweight boxer. But, yeah. I mean, he is fun to watch. He sells a lot of tickets in New York. And this is kind of that crossroads fight for him. He's 32 years old. Mm. He was just knocked out by a journeyman in Robert Helenius. Mm-hmm. He wins this fight, you can push that away, and all of a sudden you've got many, many, many millions on the table, whether it's against Ruiz, Areola. I mean, you can do a lot of fun fights with Adam Kalinowski. If you lose, I don't know where you are. I mean, Helenius is, what, 37, 38 years old, back end of his career, but knocked out. He's knocked out by Gerald Washington at one point. Like, I don't know if that's recoverable, Barack. I think for Kalinowski, we talked a lot about the stakes for Deontay Wilder. Not quite the same for Kalinowski. He's a little bit younger, and he will be back one way or the other.
Yeah.
But, man, like, this is – talk about money. There's no belt at stake in this fight, but a lot of money for Kalinowski at the stake in this fight.
I guess so, and I think what Ak's saying is proper. Like, there's going to be a lot of punches thrown, and it's going to be a crazy fight. But guess what? I really think it matters – I mean, depends on how he wins. Because if he just wins unanimous decision, split decision, majority decision, then guess what? Helenius could sit up there and say, we need a trilogy. And then you just forget about those millions of the big paychecks. Like, you got to really go in there like Dillian White went in against Povetkin. When you get knocked out by one punch, we don't expect you to have confidence. He went back in there like, no, let's do this next week. He went back in there like, no, I just made one little mistake. I'm going to go correct that. Knock him out a round earlier. Nobody asked for a trilogy. So he has to do that. If not, if he just wins, who really wants to see him fight Andy Ruiz now?
I mean, I think I'd like to see it because, I mean, that is the definition of a slobber knocker. Like, those two guys just wailing away at each other. You'd get a pretty good crowd at Barclays. I think I'd like to see that. I mean, Helenia, like, if Kalinowski beats Helenius, you will never, ever, ever, ever see Helenius near Adam Kalinowski ever again. Like, no way,
no way.
Keith Conley, our good friend who manages Kalinowski, will allow that to happen. So, I mean, we're talking $4 or $5 million on the line for Kalinowski tonight, and potentially, who knows, a shot at the heavyweight title in 2022. Before I let you guys go, I want to get your take on the future for Anthony Joshua. I know you guys have talked about this a lot on the DAZN Boxing Show. I've been pretty vocal that I think the Rob McCracken era should be over for Anthony Joshua. I think McCracken is an excellent coach, but in boxing, like, we take these coaching changes almost too personally. Like, in all sports, there are coaching changes. Like, even the best of coaches get fired at some point. Bill Belichick was fired by the Cleveland Browns once. Doc Rivers 2 years ago was fired by the LA Clippers. Like, things happen in sports where you need to change coaches. Yeah. And in two of the last four fights for Anthony Joshua, he has not looked like a high-level fighter. Worse, he has had bad game plans, did not have a good game plan in the first fight with Andy Ruiz, and had a terrible game plan in the fight against Alexander Usyk. I think for Joshua to bounce back, and I do think he can bounce back. I'm not ready to pour dirt on Joshua's grave, Ak, but I think he needs to make a coaching change. I think, frankly, he should go call Teddy Atlas and, you know, go get called like a female body part over and over again by Teddy Atlas somewhere in the Catskills, you know, and, you know, see if you can bring some inner toughness out of you that way. But I think he should go that direction. What do you think the future? What does Anthony Josh need to do?
First off, I mean, you brought up a great point about coaches. Just a little different with boxing because it's a one-on-one thing instead of an entire team. So guys feel a little more loyal with their trainers. But I agree with you. I mean, just the lack of urgency in the corner. He needs a more of a motivational type of energy in that corner when urgency needs to take place, when we have to get rid of the technical side and we need to motivate you to go in there and be a dog. Anthony Joshua needs to become a dog. He has a dog in him. We saw it against Klitschko. We saw it against Dillian White. We saw it early on in his career. I do think that the Ruiz fight kind of changed things for him, and we need somebody to bring him back. I wouldn't say he needs to, you know, the era of McCracken needs to end, but maybe he needs to add somebody to that team, bring somebody else in there to switch things up, stir things up. I don't think he's, I don't think the Joshua is done. Like my man Spencer Furin said, he's not buried, he's just planted. So I do think that he comes back and beats Usyk in the rematch, but not with the same game plan and not with that same corner. Somebody needs to be added to that team, so
but
I agree
you,
with
but
that.
But if you bring, Ock, if you bring in, like, before the second Ruiz fight, they brought in new coaches. They brought in somebody from Kronk, and they brought in some of the outside. They brought in new people, but they were I wrote it months ago, but like or years ago at this point. But he brought in some new people and claimed they were effective. We'll never know. I don't think you can bring in the kind of voice you need while keeping Rob McCracken. I just don't. I think Rob's going to have his ideas. A new coach, at least one worth his salt, is going to have his ideas, and invariably that leads to chaos. I think you need to.
Well, no, it depends. We have to have a conversation. Anthony Joshua has to have that roundtable meeting and says, "I love you. You're going to be on this team, but this is the guy in charge right now. He's going to steer the ship." The ship, and that's how. Because listen, he's loyal. He loves this guy. He won an Olympic gold medal. He became unified world champion. It's tough to say you're fired, but I believe it's easier to say you're on the team, but he's in charge now.
Yeah,
that's what has to happen.
Yeah, but like, I mean, every great. Name me one. Maybe you can probably name one or two. But almost every great fighter in boxing history has changed coaches. Like, where would Lennox Lewis be without Emmanuel Stewart? Where would Vladimir Klitschko be without Emmanuel Stewart? Where would Manny Pacquiao be without Freddie Roach? You want to go, like, later in their careers? Miguel Cotto extended his career by, like, 3 years by working with Freddie Roach. Like,
you're
coaching changes happen.
Right.
Like, sometimes they just need to happen. It's not personal. It's just professional. And you guys mentioned Jerry Cooney earlier. And I talked to Jerry this week. And Jerry was beside himself at the strategy that was utilized by Anthony, or lack of strategy utilized by Anthony Joshua.
Bad.
And that, like, if that's your game plan going in against a fighter like Usyk, I don't know if you deserve to keep your job after that, Barack.
Well, I would say that I'm not against changing coaches. What I'm against is saying he needs a change of coach without knowing all the variables. See, I was at that fight with Usyk, and yes, Anthony Joshua performed very well. But I didn't get, I'm not privy to see what was going on in the corner. I know nothing. I didn't see it on TV. So I know nothing about what was going on in the corner. Maybe Joshua just didn't perform well and didn't stick to the game plan like every boxer does sometimes. You know what I mean? Even when you win, sometimes your trainer's like, but I didn't tell you to do that. You know what I mean? So you wouldn't have a cut if you would have listened to me. So I think that if the corner is a problem, like let's say if that was their game plan and he was.
Did you watch the fight, Rock? Did you watch it afterwards?
It That's it. Now,
watch it. Then.
Also, what I'm saying is that I believe his first fight with Ruiz is probably his fault. You know what I'm saying? Like, they got to take ownership too. The fighters got to take ownership too. But if it was the game plan of the coach, then yes, I feel like you should add somebody, maybe like a Buddy McGurk.
Well, the problem is, like, Joshua has never fought like a true big man. He is he fights like a middleweight. Like, he sort of goes in there and he's got his head, he's sort
depends
of crunched down a
little
bit.
Depends on who he's fighting. I think it's all about confidence. When he fought Charles Martin, that joker was confident. When he fought Dominic Brazil, he was confident and he knocked those guys out with a smirk on his face. You know,
well, it's a little bit easier to be confident when you're fighting guys that don't really have much of a chance of beating you. Usyk was the real deal coming in. Right. Now, Charles Martin came for the big giant paycheck he got for his IBF title.
What, around $5 million?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like, I'll take it. All right, first round knockout. Goodbye. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. If I had seen him fight like a big man in previous fights, I might be a little bit more open to just kind of tweaking the game plan, bringing somebody else in. But this is a 6'6" guy with a pretty stiff jab when he wants to have one. Klitschko.
You don't think he fought like a big man against Klitschko?
Not really. I mean, I mean, like,
yeah, I don't know. Watch that fight again. He
kind of slugged it out with him for.
It's here and there. And what you're saying is a good point. But we never hear from Joshua, that was the game plan for my coach. So, and McCracken, I think he's just very loyal to Joshua. He's not going to come on air and say, he didn't follow the game plan. This guy,
right.
You know? So we don't really know. And that's what I'm saying. Maybe he's not following a game plan. Maybe he's going in there doing something different, you know.
Ah, watch the fight, Barack, and watch the corner. it wasn't a good game plan.
No, it wasn't a good game plan at all. And I think one of the other things too, and you guys are around him all week long, and I've been around him many times in the past, both in the UK, Saudi Arabia, wherever. I think he's just a little bit too comfortable at this point. Like, I don't know if it solves the problem, and maybe it is a little bit too like Rocky IV, but like, how about we get him out of his comfort zone? Get him out of that British training center. Get him away from some of get him to a new training staff. Go, again, I use the Catskills as an example, but go to Big Bear. Go to Colorado Springs. Go somewhere else to try to rejuvenate yourself a little bit. I think there's just he's always going to be, guys, an affable guy. Like, I'm not expecting him to not wave at the crowd every time he, you know, goes out there. That's kind of who he is on a personal level. But I think he needs to get out of his comfort zone a little bit going into this next fight.
I have to agree with you. Roy Jones said it to us after the fight. He said he just might be too comfortable. Listen, AJ's a huge star, and we talked about it when we interviewed him. He really doesn't even pay for anything. I mean, this guy's sponsored by Range Rover, Audemars Piguet, Hugo Boss. He doesn't have to worry about anything, so maybe he's a little comfortable. Maybe he needs to get out of that comfort zone. I think that's actually a good idea.
Yeah, like in your apartment. That'd be real uncomfortable for him.
And I'm not here, like, the critics of AJ for losing can you know, fuck right off. Like, I mean, the guy's fighting top-level guys. Like, I mean, we just ran through the Wilder hit list of the 5 years. Like, AJ certainly could do that and probably still do as big a crowd in London or wherever he's fighting. He chose to defend
himself. He still has the best resume in heavyweight division. No question about it.
I just think he's at a crossroads right now, and what happens next will probably determine whether he's a championship-level fighter for the next 3 or 4 years or something entirely different. Last thing for you. Where did Barack Alexander Usyk rise to on your pound for pound list after the win over Anthony Joshua?
It was tough. I gave it some thought. I'd put him number three. I put him number three because, in a way, he beat Donaire, but he kind of struggled also with Donaire. And it's about performance as well. You know, it's performance and it's also skill. It's not just your resume. Pound for pound, because in reality, pound for pound really wasn't about resume. It's about, you know, who looks like they're good enough to be that good in every single weight class. You know what I'm saying? And it just so happens that it's hard to put heavyweights in that because they don't, you know, they're never going to go up or never going to go down. You know, they don't have the opportunity. But Usyk, he did do it. So I got to put him up there high. But listen, you're talking about performance, Crawford. I still got him ahead because he was a knockout artist in 35, knockout artist at 40, and a knockout artist at 47. So, and he's super skillful, has everything that you can ever hope for in a fighter. So I still got him ahead of Usyk, but Usyk is number three above Inoue.
I got Usyk at number four because obviously I'm still going to have Canelo at number one. But I agree with Barack. I think Crawford is still undoubtedly number two. And I got Gervonta Davis at number three.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm joking. I'm joking. Listen, I'm going to put Errol Spence at number three, man. I think Errol has, coming from that axe, after beating Porter and fighting Porter's type of fight, because we know what he can do. We saw that he can box. He did it against Mikey Garcia. We saw what he did after the accident against Danny Garcia. I just think Errol is one of the best fighters in the world. I think he's going to continue to prove it. Obviously, we would all love to see him fight Crawford, but I have him at number three, and I have Usyk at number four.
Yeah, I've got Usyk at number two, but I'll say this. If Crawford beats Porter, he reclaims number two on my list. I think
if Crawford stops Porter, he's number one.
Resume still not there.
Has anybody even come close to even really hurting Porter?
The Porter Crawford fight is after November 6th. So Canelo goes on to beat Plant and become undisputed. How can you put Crawford above him with a Porter win?
It depends on how he beats Plant, in my opinion. You know, no, but
Barack, I wasn't as impressed. Like, he cleaned out 140. He beat some top guys at 135. But, like, The 140 at that time, not great. Like, Victor Postol is fine, but I didn't think he was
undefeated.
He wasn't pound for pound, though, at that point. And I forgot the name of the other guy he beat, who had the other belt. We saw on DAZN recently. He got
well, listen, Usyk,
but like,
Usyk never beat a pound for pound guy. You know what I'm saying?
No, because cruiserweights generally aren't. Like but he did clean out everybody at cruiserweight and took out Tony Bellew coming back down.
Like I said, he didn't beat anybody that was on a pound for pound list, but Crawford did the same thing. He cleaned out 140. And a division underneath, he was a champion there, and he came to 147, and people just don't want to fight him.
I didn't love the 135 resume. I mean, he beat Ricky Burns, but that was Ricky at the – he wasn't great. I mean,
and
the Prescott win was
Gamboa
really –
was great at the time. He was great at
the time. No, not at 135. Gamboa at 135 is not what
Gamboa
he what
gave
he
gave him so much problems those first four rounds because he's the
he buckled
fastest
him.
Fighter.
He buckled him. You're right. He buckled him. And that was because Crawford went out there and decided to, I'm going to go blast this guy out of there. And I give him credit for that.
You know why?
But Gamboa at 135 is not the same.
People like you talk about him in a certain way, and he says, you know what? I got to knock everybody out.
I think you got to be entertaining in some ways, right? Like, that's my problem with Devin Haney. Like, you know, Devin Haney didn't take any chances against Gamboa. Like,
okay.
That was Gamboa at the very end of his career.
All right, but Devin was very entertaining in the Leonardis fight, man.
Oh, I love, though, Devin. That was his breakthrough fight. Like, Devin, yeah. I thought, and I'm kind of disappointed that, you know, we'll probably get a Devin fight before the end of the year, but I don't think it's going to be anybody of consequence because nobody's...
Right.
Yeah. You know, Ryan is going to do what Ryan does. I'm still, and I've written this, I don't know that Ryan and JoJo is going to happen because...
What?
I could see JoJo, like, they're having some problems there, you know, finalizing that fight. And I could see JoJo, like, don't be surprised if you start hearing some stuff about JoJo and Vasily Lomachenko at some point at 135.
Wow.
I don't, like, and Lomachenko maybe calling. There's, like, a lot of movement right now at that, you know, as we go towards the end of the year in making those fights happen.
And that'll be surprising. I'm being that both fighters are on Golden Boy, but for that fight not to happen, a Ryan Garcia versus Jojo Diaz, that'll be odd.
It should happen. I think there are some people in Ryan's camp that coming off, I mean, it's not that long a layoff. He fought in January, but I think they'd like an easier fight. Ryan wants to fight Jojo. Like, there's no question about that. But I think there's some on his team that would like something closer to a tune-up, which... you know, is right now keeping that fight at like 95% done. That last 5% is the most difficult. But Usyk, to me, number two until Terrence Crawford beats Sean Porter. And it, no matter how he beats him, if he beats him, he goes back that number two slot and we keep going round and round and round with Canelo.
I'm not mad
still
at that.
Sitting.
I'm not mad at that at all. It's just that I don't understand how you have Spence above Inoue, couple of divisions. Plus, he fought more champions than Spence. That's why I got Crawford above Usyk, too. He fought eight champions. Usyk beat
I think because Spence has beaten bigger names and bigger threats, in my opinion.
That's
I think that
the names
in
are
a
never
way,
big. Definitely.
I think Inoue is – no, yeah, but still, I think Inoue is a giant in his division. And the opponents, though they were legitimate contenders and champions, they were subpar. I think Dornier is his biggest win. And his biggest threat, and he struggled in that fight. I'm not saying Inoue isn't a great fighter, and he shouldn't be on a pound list. Obviously, I have him at number five, but still, I just think Spence beat bigger names.
I think part of it, Barack, is that when you get in that weight class, like these guys are kind of unknown, and I don't think we give them necessarily enough credit, get the credit they deserve. I mean, like Inoue won the World Boxing Super Series. He fought the best in his weight class. He did beat Donaire, who is a monster at that weight. Like Donaire, Donaire's only real losses come when he decides to move up. Like when he goes up in different ways. Every time he comes back to 118, he is a force. And I hope he gets, whether it's Casamayero or another Inoue fight, I hope he gets one of those fights. Guys, this was, it was way too civil. I watch the DAZN boxing show every day, so I got to find, at a later time, maybe in Vegas, we'll talk about your warm, cuddly embrace of Mauricio Sulaiman and how he just he refuses to order Andrade versus Charlo. He refuses to even explain why he won't order Haney versus Lopez when Lopez eventually.
No, I'm going to order Chris Mattock versus Mauricio Sulaiman in a friendly exhibition.
I believe I was drunk once and yelled at him over the phone. I'm not sure. Like there was one moment. I just keep screaming for Andrade Charlo. Like if that fight winds up on like Fubo TV, I want to be part of the commentary team for that. I don't care. I want to be part of Andrade versus Charlo if it happens.
You talk about him so much.
I don't even care. Look, I say this to people all the time. I don't know that Andrade beats Charlo. The Andrade I saw against Liam Williams Probably doesn't beat Charlo, although Charlo against Montiel wasn't great either. I think it's a coin flip fight. Like, I just need to see it. I don't necessarily need to see them fight guys they're going to be 20-1 favorites against. Not when these are two early 30s American heavyweight champion or middleweight champions, undefeated. What are we doing? Like, this is legacy. This is your resume builder right there. Catch Akin Barak on the DAZN Boxing Show every weekday on the DAZN app, DAZN.com. You guys do a great job. Always great to catch up with you, and I will see you both in Las Vegas.
All right, take it easy, Chris.
When we come back, my conversation with Deontay Wilder. Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder are back in the ring this Saturday to complete their epic trilogy, and FanDuel Sportsbook is giving new customers exclusive 30-1 odds on either fighter to win. That's right. Now is the perfect time to give FanDuel a shot because you can win $150 on a $5 bet. That is pretty incredible. Now, how do I see this fight? Last time around, 20 months ago, Tyson Fury won by knockout. I think he does it again. It's not as much about my confidence in Fury, his conditioning, but when you get knocked out the way Deontay Wilder was knocked out, broken, battered, that's tough to come back from, especially when Wilder is just weeks away from being 36 years old. So I'm taking Fury by knockout. But this is why I love betting with FanDuel. It's easy to use, has great promotions for new and existing customers, and it has those quick and easy payouts. With FanDuel in your corner, you'll always get exclusive odd boosts, great promotions, and so much more. That's why they're America's number one sportsbook. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and sign up with the promo code BOXING to get in on the action. Promo code BOXING. Fury Wilder. Terrific gambling weekend. Can't miss it. All right, joining me now on the podcast, he is the former WBC heavyweight champion. On Saturday, he will attempt to regain his title and pick up a measure of revenge against Tyson Fury when he challenges Fury in Las Vegas. He is Deontay Wilder. Deontay, let's start here. How would you describe your level of confidence right now?
Through the roof. I ain't got no roof.
Has it been that way? How long has it been that way, your confidence being like this?
My confidence has been like that since I started my first training camp, getting ready for the July fight. Mm. You know, over time, it just got even stronger and stronger as the delays came. You know, it made us even stronger with the camp, with the relationship that's involved with the guys that's in the camp. And the task that lies at hand. So, you know, time has benefited me. The more time, the better for me.
You know, I've written about you a lot over the years, Deontay, and you've overcome a lot. You're a self-made man when it comes to boxing. This experience, losing for the first time since the Olympics in the amateurs, how difficult was that to initially get over?
It wasn't difficult at all. You know, a loss doesn't define who I am at all. You know, I think when you surround yourself by the right people, I'm always talking about love. Love been throughout this camp for me. And when you surround yourself by the love, you know, naysayers or negativity, you know, you don't see that. I've been around positive people, positive thinking, positive speaking. When you have that, you have positive results.
So even with a loss, it didn't make you think about, do I have to change dramatically? Do I have to do something significantly different to get right?
No.
As you look ahead to this fight, the most significant adjustment that you think you have to make is what?
Just being more aggressive, you know? Like I said before, I have people around, I have my trainer that I brought in, and the things that we've been doing on a consistent basis. So even with sparring, certain things that I've been doing, we've been doing on a consistent basis. It hasn't been something that I have to think about doing. It's something that I automatically do. It's like muscle memory, I would say, you know, instead of just going in, knocking guys out, we know that's a part of me, and just let it flow. It's gonna come.
Yeah, when I look back at the last two fights, you know, the first one, you came forward a lot more than you did in the second one. I mean, how big is that to be, as you said, the aggressor?
It depends on who you're fighting. Mm. You know, certain things I was able to do in the first fight that I couldn't do in the second fight due to my circumstances. But it's a brighter day, and that's what's so special about October the 9th.
You've talked a lot about your bond with Malik Scott. Malik, of course, though, was a very different type of fighter than you are. Why was he the right choice to train you for the biggest fight of your career?
I need someone that I could trust to be around me, someone that really loved me, and I knew for sure. I needed someone that had the brain genius as he has. And, you know, my guy, that's all he does. You know, he film study. He's a genius when it comes to boxing, and his mind is very strong. And when we put our minds together, we create. And that's what this camp has been about, creativity.
Some of the things he said to you, I mean, what really resonated when he was trying to, his mind, some of the things he brought to the table, what kind of stuck with you?
Just retribution, being violent, having a violent mindset, you know, reinventing myself, you know, being able to do the thing, do things on a consistent base, you know, instead of throwing one jab, we're throwing twos, threes, and fours, and that's with everything, you know. Also bringing Dunn House in as well, you know. Although Dunn's my cut man, but he got a creative mind. He's a genius when it comes to boxing and combinations as well. So we've been using the terminology of being greedy. And you don't understand what that means, but you will come October the 9th. We're going to be greedy.
Jay Deese has been your head trainer since the very beginning of your career. Was it a difficult conversation with him to say, we're going to bring in somebody else to be the head man?
It wasn't difficult at all. You know, one thing about us, we always agree on things, and we understand each other, you know, and I know what's best for me. And when I sit down and bring certain things to the table, they respect my mindset. They respect that my energy feel, you know, how I go. I'm an energy being. I feel certain things. Certain things, I won't shake your hand. I won't talk to you. I won't go in your establishment if I don't feel a certain way. You know, that's just me. I won't meet certain people. I don't care who they are, what title that they have. You know, no matter how much they may benefit me, you know, if we don't click, then I don't want to be around you. And with Jay, we that's been my day one guy, and he understands me more than anyone. And we just don't have egos on this team. Whatever going to benefit me and be the best for Deontay Wilder, that's what is going to happen. And all my guys is down for that. And it's been great, man. I got an amazing team, and I'm looking forward to displaying my talent to the world.
You were furious when Mark Breland threw in the towel in that last fight. What, if any, instructions does Malik Scott have if a situation like that comes up again?
A situation like what? Throwing the towel?
Where there's an, it may present, yeah, something like that.
It'll never happen. Malik know I'm a warrior. Malik know I'm a true king, and with a warrior and true king, you don't throw a towel in with a guy like me, no matter what it may seem. I always tell people, you know, when I fight, if your stomach can't digest what your eyes about to see, you better close your eyes or don't come. And that's the bottom line, because I'm willing to die in that ring each and every time. This is what I love to do. I don't stop no one else going doing their job or doing what they love to do. And at the end of the day, if you was a boss and you told your employee not to do something and he did it, what would you do to him?
It's time to fire him.
There you go.
Yeah. Last question for you. Do you look at this fight as win or go home? Like this, if you don't win, it's over?
Losing don't define who I am. It only makes me stronger. You know, you ever heard the song, "We Fall Down, But We Get Up"?
No, but I get it. Yeah.
Look it up, you know, and, anyone that have witnessed a failure or losing and they couldn't get up, then that's a weak-minded person. I'm by far weak. You know, nothing about me is weak, you know, sometimes losing things, you know, betters you as a person. It allows you to establish certain things. It allows you to see certain things and to keep your grass cut around certain snakes that have been around you all your life, but they've just been waiting on your downfall. And appreciate it. God don't make mistakes. I appreciate everything that's came my way. I appreciate the way it have came, because my eyes is open even more. See, my eyes has already been open to certain things, certain people, certain entities, certain energies that's been around me through my career, or even the climb of my career. But it's just been that moment in time that it's been waiting for something to happen for them to react. Because when you're winning, everybody gonna act a part. They're gonna play their part. And then when you fall, at least when they think you have failed, that's when they want to show up and show out. They want to show their true colors. And I appreciate everyone that showed their true colors. And now I know how to treat them accordingly.
Well, good luck on Saturday, Deontay. Biggest fight of the year. Huge fight for you, October 9th on pay-per-view. Thanks for your time.
Blessings.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Achen Barak and Deontay Wilder for joining the show. On Saturday night, we will have a bonus episode of this podcast, a full reaction to everything that happened in the Fury-Wilder fight. I will be joined by Sergio Mora, and I swear we will track him down.